Hey Brock, how are you?
Doing well, John. How are you?
Oh, it's been a great week so far, and I'm excited today. We are talking to Jeff Argue, who is one of the co-founders of Batch, after we catch up here.
Yeah, should be a good episode.
Well, you were looking again at Stant shirts, and it seems like they might not be for me, the tall guy, but they really cater to you, the shorter guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably do have a size that would fit you. I don't know what it is. They have like over 70 sizes, but it's not the kind of thing where it's traditional where you go look at the size chart and you pick your size. You input your own measurements and they tell you what size they think you are. So, yeah, I don't know. They might have a size for you. I haven't heard from any taller guys who have tried them, but the fact that they could fit my build makes me pretty confident that they could fit other non-off the rack builds, definitely a cool concept though. It's kind of like the hue and cry concept. I just think Stant seems to be doing it a little better, at least for my body type.
Okay, that's interesting because, yeah, I definitely have the same long arm, small torso type of issue. So I'll have to go put my sizes in over there.
Yeah, man. And you did your suit comparison video, the much awaited, much anticipated suit comparison video, which was I think Suit Supply, Indochino, Oliver Wicks, and Black Lapel, right?
Yeah, and I also had purchased Combatant Gentleman on that one as well, but it wasn't their made to measure. It was the off the rack version. So I was at least able to experience, the quality of the suit and try and get an idea of their overall process. Because I don't like to just look at the product itself. To me, it's also about what is the ordering process like, the shipping, the customer service. I like to try and get all of the aspects in there, which is probably what ended up delaying the video so badly.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is it is a process, especially for a lot of these made-to-measure companies. I mean, it could take a month to get your suit. A lot of them have it down to a couple weeks now, but you could expect to wait, 4 or 5, even 6 weeks for some of those companies.
Yeah, and even with Black Lapel, I'm waiting on a remake to come, hopefully in the next week or two. And I was going to wait for that. And then with Indochino, they're sending me a remake of a shirt that I ordered because I had to get my jacket remade. So it definitely is a little more of an intensive process than usually. Just I get a box and I'm able to open it up and check it out. But I think the complete experience that I've had throughout this process has been extremely informative. And I know we talked about it even on our third episode. Just, at that point, Indochino is going into department stores.
Yeah, I think kind of like your experience, I think Indochino has almost grown too fast and they can't keep up with it. I haven't experienced the same level of customer support with Indochino as I have with like Oliver Wicks or Black Lapel. And I don't know if that's it's tough because I don't know if that's preferential treatment because they know that I'm going to be doing a review or if that's just how they are with everybody, but yeah, I mean, with Oliver Wicks and Black Lapel, I got emails back, from the founders or somebody high up in the company with feedback and thoughts about my measurements that I sent them, and it was a very, they were very intimately involved with my order.
I'm pretty careful to not mention my channel when I order things, and sometimes I even use an alias just so that I avoid that type of thing. And even using that, I had the same, very similar experience. And I don't think I could roll my eyes any harder now than I see the Indochino ads on YouTube. I get them constantly. I mean, I think they know that I watch a lot of menswear, but that guy who's like, Indochino, great prices on suits. I couldn't roll my eyes harder at those videos.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's almost like because made to measure is somewhat mainstream, I guess, and there's got to be a Jose Bank of made to measure. There's got to be the whole spectrum. So I don't know, if I were Indochino, I would not want to be the Jose Bank of made to measure.
All right, so I was scrolling Twitter the other day, and there was a list of 420 like top bloggers, and I wasn't expecting to be on it. I wasn't listed on it, but you were on there. I think, remember, I think very back in the early episodes, I said that I should have a website. I don't really like writing, and so that's why I think I might have missed the list. But what's one of the ways that you try to avoid like distractions or getting some of your work done? Because I know you're on a pretty regular cadence. You've got your Tuesday emails. What's one of the ways that you like stay focused on getting those things done on a regular schedule?
I was actually just listening to a good podcast episode. There's a podcast called Entrepreneurs in Motion, and a really, really good podcast. I'd say for anybody who is probably past the idea phase of whatever their business or whatever they're doing, and they already have something that's generating a little bit of income. But she talks about, I was actually a guest on one of her episodes, and we talked about a bunch of stuff, but she has an episode where she talks about the productivity and routines and schedules. And what she was kind of saying, which I agree with, is it's completely different for everybody. So I almost think it's not necessarily a good idea to try to figure out what other people's productivity habits or daily routines are and then try to copy them. But I think it is worth spending some time trying to get to know yourself and your own, you know, routines and energy levels throughout the days and stuff like that. So I think for me, one of the really powerful drivers is accountability to other people. And when you're self-employed, you're not necessarily accountable to anybody, but you can be accountable to your audience. And so I have, yeah, that one thing that I do every week that I have to do every week is I have to have new content out on Tuesdays, you know, ready for the newsletter, because I can't just send a newsletter and, you know, not have any new content in there. So that's my MO for the week, you know. And some weeks it's like a struggle to get that out and it's a last minute thing. Other weeks I have a bunch of content in the queue and I'm good to go and I have a bunch of free time. But I think having that one thing that has to be done and that other people are expecting of me really, really helps. And it's funny how when you have some sort of time constraint, say, you know, say it's Sunday evening and I'm not ready for Tuesday, you know, I don't have any new content, I'll get it done. You know, you kind of do what you have to do no matter how much time you have to do it. So yeah, I think having something where you're accountable to other people and maybe you make some sort of public, you know, promise or declaration, and then people will, you know, hold you to it. So I think that's one way, you know, to stay focused. But that being said, I mean, I'm distracted all day, you know, with email and social media and all that other stuff that I think everybody struggles with.
Did it take you like a lot of experimentation to get there?
Well, I never had a regular publishing schedule for like the first, I don't know, two and a half years or something that I was blogging, and I don't really know when I think another blogger or somebody was telling me, you know, you got to be consistent. And so I decided once a week, and once I made that decision and I put it in one of my emails, said, hey, there's going to be new stuff every Tuesday. I think I even said in my onboarding email, you know, you can expect an email every Tuesday. Once I put it out there, it was pretty easy to stick with it. So it took a long time to put that in place. But once I put it in place, it didn't take that long to actually stick with it. It was instant, you know, because I want to have integrity, you know. So I want, when I say I'm going to do something, I want people to see that I actually do it.
Yeah, I like that, integrity. One of the Ryan Mickler posted a video and said consistency trumps talent. And as I was watching that video, I was like really motivated because I think it's true. It's like, I mean, I think it was a Steve Jobs thing. He said good artists ship. And that's how I feel sometimes in the morning when I'm trying to get like a video up and posted, is even if it's not perfect, the fact that I'm getting it out there is better than letting a video sit in my queue for 2 years, which is my mattress video.
Yeah. I think another along those lines, you know, I want to put like a poster up behind my desk that just says helpful is better than perfect, you know, because I think especially with the stuff we do, like with your suit video, it's helpful because there's a lot of people trying to make a decision like where am I going to put, are we going to spend this $500 of my money, you know? And sure, you could buy better mics and like learn about color grading and, you know, do all this stuff to make your video quote unquote better or more perfect, but it won't necessarily make it more helpful. So I think that's the most important part of what we do, is just putting out really helpful content. And I think people are okay with lower quality or non-perfect, if it's really helpful.
Do you have like a social media habit? Do you try to like limit it in a certain way, or how do you approach that?
Well, I don't. So on Facebook, I deleted Facebook for a couple of years and was very happy with that. But now they have so many features that are useful for businesses, like the Facebook group. I have a pretty active Facebook group for the blog, so I have to be on there. So on desktop, I use a plugin for Chrome called Facebook News Feed Eradicator, and it makes it so when you go to Facebook.com, instead of seeing your news feed, which is just full of, like, at least for me right now, it's like baby pictures, engagement photos, and like fake news, and then like viral like cat videos. So it's just mostly stuff I don't really need to be seeing. So instead of showing you that, it shows you a motivational quote.
You got a
Yeah,
problem
it's a
with
free plugin.
baby pictures, man?
Only if it's my niece. I'm cool with those, but otherwise, yeah, I don't really want to see.
No, we specifically don't post any pictures of our kids on Facebook. We don't. I'm the same way. I don't really use Facebook that much at all. But I think that the whole idea of trying to take control of your attention again, because that's the main way that these companies, they engineer their products to get as much of your attention as possible, and just trying to find that balance between the two. That's pretty good. I'm gonna look up that extension so that I can maybe log in again and start to use it.
Yeah, it's a great little hack. I think you can also, batch your social media consumption, so you only check it maybe once a day or something, or maybe beginning and end of the day. Delete the apps from your phone. I don't think there's any reason to have, I guess, except for Instagram because it's mobile, but I don't think there's any reason to have Facebook on different devices. But I don't know. I mean, do you find yourself checking that stuff throughout the day?
Oh, to me, there's no better hit of dopamine than opening that Twitter app and scrolling to see what is new. And it's like the biggest. I got really good about not doing that last year, towards the end of the year, and staying very focused. And just for some reason, these past like 2 months, anytime I'm like working on something, I'm like, oh, let me just open up Twitter real quick. And then the app that I use, Tweetbot, shows your unread count, and I go to the top and I read every tweet and I scan. And so, yeah, that's why I ask, is because it's my own personal problem that I'm trying to work through as well.
Yeah, it is kind of tough. I think that all these different platforms can be really good for certain things. From a business perspective, at least, I don't find any return on time spent with social media. I guess aside from the Facebook group, which I think is a really great place for my audience, or for a certain, a small portion of my audience to meet and talk and share photos and stuff. But really, other than that, if I put an hour into Twitter, I don't get anything back, and it sounds selfish, but that's just how it is. So if I could spend an hour on Twitter or an hour, editing video or shooting video, it's the choice is so obvious for me. It is still hard to not get distracted.
Yeah, time is definitely our most valuable resource. Well, that being said, we'll jump over to our interview with Jeff Argue today, co-founder of Batch, and we'll catch up with him right now. Jeff Argue on the line. He is one of the co-founders of Batch, and from what I'm told, you are the creative driving force.
Thank you. That's very nice of you to state that. I think we're both the creative driving force. Tom, my business partner, does more of the web development and the visuals and stuff like that. And I'm the one with the fashion background. So I would say what you see on your body might be more me, but what you see as a brand is definitely a very 50-50 split.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Well, it is a beautiful site for beautiful product. For the people who might not know Batch, kind of what is your pitch as a menswear company?
All right, so that's an interesting one. It definitely has changed, as any small company would start that way. But Batch, of course, the concept's to have it a very small, intimate menswear experience. That's where the name comes from. We make in small batches. As you can see all the time, our stuff's sold out or back-ordered or what have you, because we make in little chunks. That's where we began, and our niche is definitely trying to bring a lot more quote-unquote design or aesthetics in a very specific manner into menswear, and I guess it's just we'll see where it goes, but I have a extensive design background, and I think that there's a huge opportunity for a little bit more design in menswear, so it's for every guy to judge that for himself, but that's probably the key factor is what we can bring to the aesthetic side of the business. And right now we do only shirts, but of course as the brand grows, we'd like to be a lifestyle brand and bigger, hopefully.
Very cool. Well, where'd you start? Where'd you grow up, and what's your background?
So my background is I grew up in Vancouver, Canada, and then I moved when I was 18 to New York to go to Parsons. And I guess I loved fashion since early in my high school days. That was more based on the technical side. I really love working with my hands, and somehow, some way, sewing was something that I was very good at. But then that, of course, switched into a love of anything design. And then I went to New York. I was there for 13 years doing corporate fashion. And then recently I moved down to Florida, where I currently am. And I worked for a big women's wear brand here. And then started Batch year five into my job, and then quit last January, I believe it was. So Batch is about a year old as we speak.
Are you able to say anybody that you worked with in New York as the fashion capital?
Yeah, of course. I worked for Tommy Hilfiger. I worked for Ann Taylor. I worked for DKNY. I worked for Talbots. I kind of worked all the same range of women's wear. Design tends to be that. You get a little bit into your niche, of course. And then, of course, I worked women's because that's where the money is in fashion. Or has been in fashion, and I think that there's a huge change in terms of equality or menswear, but it's still coming. Men haven't kind of embraced the fashion the way women have. So this Batch is definitely my first major foray into menswear.
Well, I think Brock and I would definitely agree that that is on the horizon and it's coming. But what do you think sparked the you said you were naturally good at sewing. Was there something, did you figure out how to create, or what kind of sparked that?
I've always thought about that. It's definitely from my father. My father's very good with his hands. He renovated our house for, I think, 16 years or something, all through my childhood, and so that's something that I picked up just as watching, and he's a very type A personality, which has made me, obviously, a very type A personality, so perfectionism and drive for excellence is definitely built into my desire, but also I think my brain works very construction-wise, or understanding, you know, multiple steps and what's necessary for construction, and in fashion that's very, very important to make something very complicated. And something that I think is going to be phenomenal in menswear as menswear grows is it's been quite simple and basic for a long time. And the beauty of things is when they get those really fine details that are actually immensely complicated. And I think as Batch grows, you see that more and more on our site. And that's something I think I have to bring to the world or to the guys that like what we do.
Yeah, speaking of the details, I know that you guys kind of made a name for yourself with your collar contrast, and it's cool because it's one of those little details that I think men really appreciate, because a lot of guys don't want to wear something that calls too much attention to themselves, but they do want something that sets them apart from, you know, everybody else in the office. And I know that I think you did an interview with Emmanuel last year, and you said that your bestseller was just the white shirt, you know, with the navy contrast. Is that still the case, or are you guys, I know you've expanded to some other shirts with other interesting details, but do you find that guys are still, mostly interested in buying just that basic shirt with that one detail that sets it apart?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we definitely started out that way, and it has been probably our number one seller. We also got into utility shirts last fall, I guess it was, and those have been an absolute smash hit because of kind of their uniqueness and in our industry and just a lack of really good quality utility shirts. So just, I guess they're different, completely different. They're not apples to apples, but yeah, our white with navy has been phenomenal, and that's where you see some new versions or some new options to that. It really, both Tom and I are creative guys, but I think maybe all guys are kind of changing where, of course, we don't wear ties anymore. We just wear our shirts unbuttoned, the top button or the top two buttons, and it's nice to have a little detail. Truthfulness, where that came from is me having my women's wear background. Women have known this for centuries. That's what necklaces are all about. It brings attention to the face. It gives you a little bit more of interest to what you're wearing than just wearing a plain Jane top. As much as it's not a necklace, it just adds a little bit of interest. And that's what the men's tie was for centuries. It's not, maybe not deconstructed that way, and guys don't view it that way, but that's the reality of it, is it was to bring interest and to point attention to your face. So our white with navy does a very phenomenal job of that in a very subtle way.
You said something interesting. You said the navy did really well, but then when you had your casual shirts, they did gangbusters. Do you think there's a shift as we move from the more formal office attire to more business casual? Do you think that some of those dress shirts will stay part of your staple line, but then the casual shirts is just what everybody's wearing all the time? Where do you see that kind of shift between casual and business?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think that what happened is our white with navy's good, but I think that our utility is fantastic in terms of nailing the nail on the head for, like you're saying, the shift of how men are dressing. So I've been a big proponent of, and this will go against every guy that's ever listening, but I really dislike plaid. I think it's a big trend that has come and gone, and we're kind of holding on to it as guys with both hands because it's a masculine trend, and it's, there isn't really a replacement for it at this moment in time. And so you either wear a solid shirt or you wear plaid. And the utility shirts that we designed, I actually think are a great replacement for plaid, and I think that's what's happening, is the guys that are a little bit more fashion forward and have moved on also are finding that that's an awesome update to having a little bit of interest in their wardrobe, having that very masculine feel, but then not being, our shirts are very, you own one, John, but they're a little bit more refined, they have a tapered cut, they kind of fit more like a fashion shirt or a nicer men's shirt. So that's where I think guys have been attracted to them, and they're quite hard to find that, like if you were to go to Gap or Banana and find one of those shirts, it's going to be a very mediocre piece, and we're trying to update that a little bit.
Yeah, it's very intangible, but I find myself gravitating towards the utility shirt, just like, oh, I think I'll wear this today.
Yeah.
What are some of the things, like, as you shifted from your kind of corporate women's wear thing into the men's wear, what are some of the challenges you faced as you made that shift into essentially being your own boss?
That's a good one. So that I've had, endless amounts of challenges in the last year. I've never done, I've never done small business to the level that we're doing it. I've only done corporate because I had green card issues and I needed huge business behind me. And then I very much like corporate in terms of making for the masses. And so this has been an interesting, a definite interesting challenge, very humbling. But I would say the number one challenge that we don't talk about at Batch is, or talk about enough, is that we're building our own workshop that makes all of our own shirts. That's why we're Batch. And that's been probably the number one challenge, because as we grow, they grow, and as they grow, we grow. But we're connected, and so it's a frustrating thing. Any other, not any other business, but a lot of other businesses start with a pre-existing, you know, you just get onto Alibaba or something like that, or you have some big production facility over in China and you just say, give me 1,000 pieces, and then 1,000 pieces appear at your door in a week or two. And that's how the bulk of fashion is. But what we're doing doesn't work that way. It definitely is very, very, very baby steps.
Could you tell us where your workshop is?
Yeah, we produce out of India. So I made a very good friend in my last job, and he decided to start his own men's shirt company or men's shirt production company. And so when I was last in India for my business or for my corporate job, I met up with him and said, "Oh, I think we could do something together. Why don't we try to make something special?" And I guess that's where Batch came out of. But then my standards as being a type A personality are kind of through the roof in terms of what I want to achieve and what I think a standard of a men's shirt should be. So that's where the learning curve and the drastic challenges and the slowness and stuff like that in terms of our growth has been. So I don't know. It's fascinating, but for somebody that has zero patience as myself, also it's you know, it's kind of like I need to become a monk or something, or just meditate and pray all day long.
Yeah, I can't even imagine how frustrating that must be. I know. Yeah, I only have a brief foray into the apparel manufacturing world, but even that was, you know, enlightening. How do you deal with the stigma about, you know, shirts being made overseas in India or China? I mean, it seems like these days, even though there's so much evidence that you can create an extremely high quality product pretty much anywhere in the world.
Right.
I'm sure you still have to deal with that stigma and that question, right?
That's a phenomenal, phenomenal question. Yeah, really, really interesting. I think that's probably one of my larger crosses to bear, same with trying to get men into gorgeous clothes. But I chose India because they are willing to slow down and work on something amazing. Kind of, you know, like everybody knows Italy and France in terms of making, but they've become just so extremely costly to just have that Made in Italy name. And what I would like Batch to become and the design and the level of change just won't come out of a lot of these countries. And so since I have extensive background in sourcing and understanding production, there was just something kind of correct about India. You know, hopefully the guys that have followed us since the beginning, it gives us the flexibility really to start creating amazing products. So I know Batch has been on a rocky road for the last year, but I think as you see Batch grow, you'll start seeing really, truly, truly amazing world-class shirts come out of the last place in the world you'd think world-class shirts would come out of. And that, I don't think you can just do anywhere in the world anymore. You know, definitely not China. They're going to want to sell you 1,000 pieces, and they're going to be perfect, but they're going to be sterile. And there's a side of our shirts that just has this old craftsmanship quality to it that has gone missing with the rise of fast fashion and $20 shirts and all that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, I'm not going to be able to convince anybody overnight, but I think over the course of the company, there's going to be a very exciting thing that's going to happen. So, but yeah, for the stigma, I don't know. That'll just be me changing it over 20 years, that you'll buy a shirt from us and you'll say, that's actually truly a beautiful thing, and I don't care where it comes from. Those guys, you know, we're all human, so those guys do truly care about fine tailoring and fine craftsmanship.
I think part of that shift too, and you're seeing this with companies like Everlane, is they're starting to try and bring more clarity into their supply chain, so they have pictures of their factories and they talk about their workers. And I think that's just something we need to kind of work on as a society, or as even just as Americans, right? We want things that are made in the USA, or like you said, made in Italy. But really, there are some good things coming out of India, and there are places in China that will make high quality products.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that what you guys are doing to, you know, telling the story a little bit is probably the key thing, because for me, it very much muddies our message on our website when we talk too much about that stuff. But it needs to, you know, it, everybody's different. So how you decide to portray that and what you want to talk about is very important. Everlane is a good example, but that's their key one thing. And so that's not our key one thing to talk about, our responsible, you know, treatment of people and how much we pay for our shirts and all that kind of stuff. But that's something that definitely, if any founder should be very responsible in terms of being honest about it and being a respectful person in terms of it. That was a big part of me getting out of corporate, is I knew I had some great value, and direct to consumer on online, I can give much more value to the customer while still being very, very fair and treating our tailors with high respect and getting beautiful stuff out of them. But you know what, the really interesting thing in learning about patches, it's just like a kitchen or anything. When you treat your tailors well, they're going to make good clothes for you, right? It's, you see it come through, and with our fast fashion, it's pretty difficult to see that. You can kind of tell, you know, when you're trying to get a shirt for $20 from H&M or something like that, that's not going to be a shirt that has much care and love put into it. A big shift going back to that, you know, you want something that has value in this world and investment.
Yeah, I like that you're almost like slow fashion versus fast fashion.
We're definitely we should put that on the site. Actually,
are instead slow of fast fashion, we're slow fashion. Well, obviously, you know, Brock and I focus on, you know, menswear and style. Is there some sort of style principle that you kind of live and dress by, or some sort of tip that you like to give when it comes to men's fashion?
Yeah, definitely. I think that individual style is underrated in this world. I think that every guy needs to have his own take on it, regardless if people make fun of you or not. I've always been in fashion, so I've always had my own take. But then I think that there's a big shift in menswear that you're going to be able to have your own take a lot easier in the future, whereas back in the past when you only had the choice of Brooks Brothers or Macy's or something like that, it was much more difficult. And with all these little online stores popping up or different aspects of menswear, guys can really embrace that. And I don't think guys, different than women, and I'm not going to stand up on a bandstand about it, realize the power of style, their own style, and how much it makes a big difference in their lives. And since I've been on both sides of the fence, I know how much it makes a big difference when you walk in a room, when you stand up tall. Very little, sadly, of what a person thinks about us is what comes out of our mouths in terms of first impressions. And so if I can help in any way, it's getting those first impressions correct. And I think Batch can do that in more ways than one. And so I know you guys talk a lot about that and hit on that all the time in what you guys do, but it's extremely important, and something that I will stand for forever is making sure that guys look phenomenal. You know, just it's a weapon, and you got to use it correctly. Style. So
messages that Brock and I really try to hit on is making sure your clothes fit. Is, you know, you can look really good in almost anything, but if it doesn't fit right, you know, fit's very important. And then to your point, having, you know, if you always wear, you know, lapel buttons, or if you always wear colored socks, then having that personality kind of come through in your clothing. Because just as you're saying, you walk in a room, people are looking at what you're wearing.
Yeah, 100%. Well, look at how much money we spend on our cars, right? So that when we drive up to some place, we look amazing. But then look at how little money guys spend on their clothes, and they don't realize that it's way more impactful than your car, your house, anything else. And it's actually a very small portion of what guys spend in their day, but they don't realize how they're kind of hurting themselves. So there's no successful person out there that doesn't dress well.
Yeah, don't even get me started on cargo shorts and flip-flops.
I do live in Florida, so.
Well, yeah. Well, Jeff, we appreciate you getting on here. We're excited to keep checking out Batch. Is there Anything you're working on now that, you know, when this will come out in a few weeks, or is there something you want to direct people at specifically?
No, I think just checking us out and seeing what we're doing. I think everybody can make their own decisions as opposed to, you know, what they like in style. So I think that just doing what feels right is great, and we'll be here and making great stuff, and hopefully one day we'll be part of your lives too.
Great, fantastic.
I really appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Jeff. Nice to meet you.
Great to meet you, Brock.
Thank you for listening to the Buttoned Up Podcast, a collaboration between John Shanahan of The Cavalier and Brock McGough of Modest Man, and we'll see you next week.